This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Approximately 18 times each day, someone dies while waiting for an organ transplant. Today, there are more than 117,000 people waiting for a life-saving transplant. April is National Donate Life Month, and joining me to talk about organ donation is Dr. Schimmel Shaw, Director of Liver Transplantation and Hepatobiliary Surgery and Associate Professor of Surgery at the University of Cincinnati and UC Health. Also, Andy O'Malley, who's the Public Affairs Director with Life Center Organ Donor Network. We also have Real Beatty with us, who received a life-saving liver transplant on April 22, 2011. And also WCPO reporter Tanya O'Rourke, who is a kidney donor. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon.
Now, Tanya, tell us your story. You actually donated a kidney to a relative, correct?
Well, not exactly a relative. It's my sister's husband's sister, Susan. She needed a kidney. She'd grown up with diabetes as a child, and she's about a year older than me. So she was in her 40s when this happened. That, you know, her kidney was just going south, and diabetes had taken a toll. And we, you know, I'm going to go with the whole story, but I remember being at dinner with my sister and my brother-in-law, and they were telling us that Susan's health was starting to fail because of the kidney, and looked like she was going to need a transplant soon. And my husband Pete and I both said, well, we'll get tested. And, you know, just like that, you say that. And you know, when you say it, you believe it. And I did anyway. And so about a month or two later, I got a call from my sister saying, your turn. We've all been tested. You said you'd be tested. And I said, yeah, I did. And so I went to Christ Hospital, sat down, and I said, you know, I'm going to be a match. And the nurse was so nice. She was like, yes, sure, honey, whatever. And I was not just a match. I was like a perfect match, a perfect match. And it kind of went from there. And, you know, I remember getting the call saying, you're a match. And I said, okay, great. What do we do now? And it was sort of like living in a fog, living in a dream. But I realized as soon as I said I would get tested that if I were a match, how could I say no? How could I say, sure, I don't need this organ and you need it to live, but I'm going to say no. How am I going to do that? And I wasn't. I was always committed from the second I said I would get tested.
That's exactly. That's amazing. Now, what was the donation experience like, Tanya?
You know, it was quite a process, but a great process. You go through a battery of tests. The first part is just finding out that, you know, a blood draw to say, yeah, you're compatible. And there's levels of compatibility that the doctor can talk to that I cannot. And then you go through a battery of tests to find out if you as the donor are well enough to give a kidney, because they're not going to put you at risk. And so, you know, you've got to find out if there's a risk of diabetes in your own blood, if there's all these things that could crop up. And guess what I found out is that I'm about the healthiest human being on the planet. at least in the midsection. So we took care of that. And so after, you know, it took a couple weeks to find out, to find out for sure that I was really capable of doing this. And the minute they said I was capable, they give you a psychological test to make sure you're doing this for the right reasons and that you really understand the ramifications of giving up a piece of yourself. Because some people do experience a little bit of some blues after they do this, but I think that's more about, you know, the medication they put you on, you know, when they put you under the anesthesia. I was fine, and I want to make that clear. But it was a really great process, and once they said I was clear, ready to go, I said, then let's do this right away, because she was within a few weeks of going on dialysis. And if I could have spared her that experience, why wouldn't I? Because they made it clear to me, we could do this at my timetable, at my leisure, but no time was going to be better. I have four kids in the house. No time is going to be better than the present.
How is she doing today?
She's doing well. The kidney is strong. As I said, we were a very good match with each other, so that kidney is not only doing well, it's doing extremely well. She has to be on medication, obviously, for the rest of her life, anti-rejection medications and such, but significantly better than the alternative for her, and
right.
She gets to have a good life, and her kidney is working. And so she's doing well. I just saw her on Easter. It was at her mom and dad's, actually, for Easter brunch, and she seemed happy. She makes me happy.
Well, and I think Tanya's story really highlights, you know, we talk a lot about donation, but, you know, there are more than 120,000 people on the national waiting list, and the majority of those people are waiting for kidney transplants. And so what many people don't realize is that they can help by being a living donor, you know, what Tanya did, which I think is just remarkable.
Tanya, prior to this, had you ever thought about being a donor?
No, but I will say this, and I worked in PR for a couple of years, and Life Center was one of my clients, so I always knew I would be an organ and tissue donor upon my demise. My mom was a very strong believer of, you know, organ and tissue donation, and she died almost 12 years ago now, and she made it clear to us what she wanted. So we had discussed, as a family, organ and tissue donation, now mostly as a non-living donor. But my mom died, unfortunately, the way she died, she wasn't able to donate much. And at the time, the laws have changed since then. But my dad got to have the final say, and he wasn't terribly comfortable with donating what could be donated. So for me to donate my kidney was sort of like letting her live out her dying wish as well. So that was an added thing for me. But as a family, and I know Andrew will probably echo this, talking about it at dinner,
yes,
on the vacations, we discussed it. We knew what everyone wanted in our family, and it's varying things that people want.
Yeah, this is a big decision, isn't it?
It is. And that's something that Life Center, in all of our community outreach and education, you know, we're talking with people about the importance of designating your decision to be an organ and tissue donor. But the next step in that process is to share that decision with your family so that they know what your wishes are. That's just, I mean, it's very important. And it's a conversation, frankly, that we all should be having at home.
Tanya.
Yeah, and I have it now. I'm sorry, Andrew. I have it with my kids. They know where I stand on
that. That's great.
My husband knows very clearly what I want.
And Tanya's been a great, just, I think, kind of model and just, you know, really sharing her story and being a public figure and kind of sharing her journey with donation. And I think that has gone a long way in just encouraging others to, you know, think about doing something like that. So thank you, Tanya, for doing that.
Tanya, you said that
you're welcome. I got to say, it's quite, it's the best experience I've ever gone through. I can't tell you how much it has brought to me in my life. And I get calls or emails, I would tell you, weekly, from someone who is either going through the process to get a kidney or wants to donate a kidney. In fact, one of my son's friend's moms and I are trying to have a conversation because she's considering it at this point. And, you know, I anything I can do to help in this process, I just think it's in, how, again, how could I say no?
Right.
So this had a huge impact on your life.
It did, yeah. It did. I mean, I know I have to stay healthy, which is not a bad thing for me to know. I got to stay hydrated, which is not a bad thing for me to do. But I also know I'm an extremely healthy person. My priorities changed quite a bit through the process. I realized I got rid of some things that were unnecessary or negative in my life and added a whole bunch of positives. I found out a whole lot about people around me, too. And it was, and I got to give a shout out to my company, the E. Davis Scripps Company, which gave me the time to do it with pay. They didn't dock me any pay for taking time off to do this. They let me take leave so that I could do it for a whole month. And so for me, it was such a learning process. And it's something that touched my heart. And people come up to me all the time and say, gosh, I really appreciate what you did. And just that, I'm almost embarrassed because I feel like it was something I just would have done without anyone knowing about it. But to get to tell people so that they might consider it, that's the greatest gift I can keep giving.
Tanya, you said it seemed unreal at first. What, at what point did it dawn on you that, no, this is a very real experience that I'm going through?
I think that it's designed, the process is long enough as far as the testing process, kind of designed to let that sink in, because you do go through, you know, weeks and weeks of making sure that you're okay. And so I think it came on a little bit at a time. And I remember the night, you know, they tell you, you can, up until the moment they stick that anesthesia mask on you, you can say, nope, I don't want to do it. The night before, I remember my dad and my husband saying, are you really sure? And I was so at peace. I said, I'm fine, you guys. I know what I'm doing here. And I just knew it was going to be okay. And this is something that's been done so many times successfully. And I was in such great hands. And I felt really good about it.
Did going through this give you a better appreciation and a better perspective on the importance of organ donation?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Did going through this give you a better appreciation, Tanya, of the importance of organ donation?
Yeah, I think I had a pretty healthy one. As I mentioned, I did some PR work in a different life with Life Center, and I understood and really appreciated what they were doing. But yeah, I think you don't realize in our community that there are people everywhere who are in need. In fact, a guy I work with needs a kidney, and I've seen him every week of, you know, for 20 years, and I'm like, hey, how's it going? After this, he came up and talked to me, and I had no idea what he was going through, and he's still going through that process. He has other health issues as well, and it's amazing to me how many people are going or suffering who just need someone to reach out and say, I can do this. I can help you. And I think it did change my perspective immensely.
Tanya, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. We appreciate it.
I was pleased to be asked. Thank you so much.
Dr. Shaw and Andy, I'd be interested in your perspectives. Is the experience that she went through, is that pretty typical of what an organ donor goes through?
I think from the living donor perspective, yes. I mean, the folks that we have volunteers, our Donate Life ambassadors at Life Center, who volunteer their time, and quite often they're living donors. And, you know, a lot of times they're asked that question, you know, well, why would you do this? And the response is, why wouldn't I? You know, it's just such a wonderful gift to give if you're able to do it. And I definitely agree that I think people definitely changes their perception and outlook on life in a positive way.
It's really an incredible process from the medical standpoint, because everything has to be aligned. And as she described, it's a long process, but it's a long process on purpose. You have the donor advocate who makes sure that you're thinking clearly, you know what you're doing, you're not being forced into it. It gives you some time to reflect on your decision to donate. We allow them to have every opportunity to back out, as she mentioned, up until the last point. And then to have everything work out with the recipient in terms of the anatomy and the size and the health of the donor, the health of the recipient, timing everything, it's really something that comes together and is one of the true advances that we've had in the field of transplantation and surgery, is to be able to do this so successfully and so commonly now that people want to come forward and do it.
We will continue our conversation about organ donation after the break, and you can join in by calling us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. This is National Donate Life Month, and we continue our discussion about organ donation with Dr. Shimmel Shaw, Andy O'Malley, and Real Beatty. And you can join the conversation by calling us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Now, we heard Tanya's story as a donor. Real, you were on the other side of this. You actually received a transplant several years ago. In fact, well, it was 3 years ago?
3 years ago yesterday.
Wow. Tell us your story.
Yes. Well, it's just totally amazing, the medical advances that allow me to actually live a life and to be happy and to be healthy and to enjoy time with my loved ones. It's absolutely amazing. I was told that I had a year to live, and this was in January of 2011. And as Tanya mentioned and Dr. Shaw mentioned, the process is very lengthy, you know, but you get in the process of preparing yourself for the eventuality of death and knowing that this may not happen. And then when someone does step up and says yes to donation and is willing to be that one that's willing to save your life, even in the event of their own tragedy. It's just an awesome feeling. And so I'm so thankful for the donor that did say yes and allowed me to continue to live my life and be with my family and continue to even do things like this to spread the word of organ donation.
Now, when you were first told that you had a severe liver condition, only had so much time left, that made you more determined at that point, didn't it? You were determined to find some way to keep going, weren't
yes,
you?
Yes, you're absolutely correct. You know, at the time, I had a young daughter. She was 2 years old at the time. And, you know, you think that you have to survive. You have to live. You have to press forward because there are people who love and who are counting on you. And, you know, you want to definitely go ahead and have the expectancy to continue to live on.
Well, talk some more about how this has changed your life. I guess you have a different view of things now, don't you?
All right, you certainly do. I mean, when you're faced with the demise, and at the time, you know, I was only 31 years old. So, you know, no one in their big plan of life expects, you know, to have to face this type of challenge. But fortunately, I had a wonderful support system in my wife, Rosalind, and it turned out absolutely amazing, and I'm so happy to be here today to share the story.
Oh, and I think the really remarkable, wonderful thing is that you and your wife had that new daughter last year.
Yes, we certainly did, and that's. Yeah, we have a 10-month-old now, and just do the math, and you can easily see that without someone saying yes and someone being willing to pass along the gift of life, that my 5-year-old now would not have a 10-month-old baby sister who she absolutely loves and adores. And so it's definitely a blessing. It's really, truly amazing how a simple yes can pass life on, not just to me, but also to my youngest daughter and the lives that are touched through the work of the Donate Life and Life Center organization.
So it most certainly gives you a whole new perspective on life.
Yes, it does. It certainly does. And, you know, you value the little things even more so. I think prior to the transplant, you I kind of went about life and just kind of did the thing, and you really didn't think about not being able to enjoy the simple things. You know, I was sick, and so I didn't have a lot of energy. And so when your energy begins to decline and you can't spend that time playing with your child or going to the park or even just walking through a store, and now having my strength back and having the opportunity to really, really passionately enjoy those little simple opportunities to spend time with my family, it's amazing. And you do look at life differently after a transplant because you know what it's like not to have, you know, the energy or to have the opportunity or to even have the days on a calendar, you know, because you're counting down. It's absolutely wonderful to be here.
You know, the other amazing thing is if you hadn't told me that you had a I would never have known. Mm-hmm. You look perfectly great. Fine. You look healthy. You look like you feel great.
Right. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. I think at the time of the transplant, I was probably weighed 98 pounds.
Oh, my heavens.
Wow. And so just being able to, you know, to fit my clothes, you know, and look healthy and be healthy and have that type of compliment is amazing because it really does work. It truly works. You know, when someone is able to save your life and live a healthy life and you are just back to your normal thing is awesome.
I told him the same exact thing. And I think that the goal is for transplant patients to look like normal people and live a normal life, and he's a living testament of that. Mm-hmm. And you rescue them from near death, and then to bring them back to where they were well before they got sick. I don't think many people realize that that's the power of transplantation.
It truly is life-saving. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not exaggerating when you say you're
right.
Saving a life.
Yes.
That's literally true.
Yes. I had the opportunity to meet Rill. It was, I guess, about 2 years ago, 1 year ago. And just the passion and energy that he had, because he came to Life Center and said, I want to get involved and just I want to share my story, and has done that. And just, I mean, really, I think has touched so many people just with his story. And really, again, just helping people to connect that purpose to why this decision, the decision to say yes, to be an organ and tissue donor is so important.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our discussion. And let's talk with Susan in Fairfield. Good afternoon, Susan.
Good afternoon. My question is, I'm wondering if an individual is healthy, but like I'm 69, is there an age limit at which you would not be able to donate or they would not want your organs?
We more and more are accepting and considering anyone and any diseases for organ donation. The important thing is to know that really any age is okay. We will consider it. Because there's such a shortage of organs, we need to exhaust every possibility, leave every stone unturned. 69 is not old. We will use organs from a 69-year-old without any concern.
I'm glad to hear you say that 69 is not old, Doctor. Much appreciated. Makes me feel younger. Susan, thank you very much for your question. We appreciate it. 513-419-7100. If you'd like to join our conversation, and Dr. Shaw, how many transplants are done in the Cincinnati area hospitals?
We at the University of Cincinnati Medical Center, we do about 60 liver transplants a year and about 75 kidney transplants a year. At Christ Hospital, we do about another 60 or 70 kidney transplants. And then Children's Hospital as well does about 20 liver transplants. I'm not sure how many kidneys and lung transplants they do. But those are the programs that are in the area.
So we've actually got some pretty major, pretty well-established transplant programs in Cincinnati.
With long histories, rich traditions, and growing programs at the same rate. All our programs are currently growing.
Andrea, we use the statistic that across the U.S. there are more than 117,000 people who are waiting for an organ transplant. What are the numbers like for Ohio? Break them down for Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, and locally. What do those look like?
Locally, there's more than 700 people waiting for life-saving transplants. And in Ohio, it's over 3,000, and it's about the same for the wait list for Kentucky and Indiana. So the need continues to grow every year. As I tell people when I started at Life Center about 8 years ago, the wait list, I think, nationally was not 100,000. So to see it grow to be 120,000, I think, shows the critical need and the critical shortage of organs.
So the list is growing then? It's,
yes. Okay. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, how many people are getting an organ donation every year?
Typically, we see, I want to say across the country, it's
about 7,000, I think.
So, and as you had started the show and saying, you know, each day 18 people die waiting for a life-saving transplant. So, obviously, there's still a shortage of available organs, which is why the community outreach and education piece is so important. You know, I think the first caller touched on it's actually a myth that we hear quite a lot, is that I'm too old to donate my organs. And, you know, I think Dr. Shaw answered that question and just saying, you know, the need is so great that no one is turned away and there is no age limit. And I think it's important for people to realize that. And people can have a history of medical, you know, some sort of medical issue or illness, and that wouldn't exclude them from being a donor. So it's important that people keep an open mind about that process and just make the decision and let all of that be determined at the time of death.
And you brought up an interesting point about individual health. And Dr. Shaw, what if my health isn't the greatest? Is that can I still be a donor, or does that preclude me from being a donor?
You can certainly still be a donor because there's a lot of organs there's in your body. There's your heart, your lungs, your liver, two kidneys, your pancreas, and also tissue, cornea, skin, bones. So there's an ability to be a donor in many different ways than just using your kidneys. And so you might have bad diabetes and bad hypertension, but your liver will be perfectly normal. Or you might have a very good heart. So that's what I mean by saying that just age alone. We've been using donors with a history of cancer that's remote, if they have good follow-up, donors that are that we don't know much about, and more commonly donors with IV drug use and social history that is a bit on the sketchy side. We have to use those organs. And the take-home point is that there are more patients on the waiting list that's growing than there is the growth in the number of donors. So that disparity is increasing every day. And so we just, like I said, don't leave any stone unturned.
Now, Bernita from Mason called in, and she had a question. She wanted to ask about tissue donation. We started to touch on that because people typically, I think of organs. They think of livers. They think of hearts. They think of kidneys. But tissue is a big area too, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think a lot of times, you know, people are more aware of the organ aspect, but tissue is not as widely discussed. And I think it's a very important piece to this discussion. Tissue can help up to 60 people through skin, bone, tendons. We have one of the best burn centers here in the country in the Shrine Burn Center for Children. And a lot of the skin that is recovered by Life Center goes to help those burn patients. A lot of the tendons, tissue go to help with different surgeries, be it knee surgeries, those types of things. The bone can be used for dental procedures. I mean, there's such a vast amount of ways that tissue is used that people may not realize. So I think it's very important that people understand that that's a wonderful opportunity to help other people.
How many lives can a single donor save? Are there statistics on that?
One donor can save up to 8 lives as an organ donor, and then as a tissue donor could help up to 60 people.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Dr. Shaw, does being a donor necessarily mean you have to go through extensive surgery, or do they use a lot of procedures nowadays that are maybe less invasive, like laparoscopic surgery, that kind of thing, to do this?
We're now removing the kidneys routinely, laparoscopically, through minimal incisions. The recovery is much faster. You're back to work much faster. Patients are commonly only in the hospital for a day after donating their kidney. The liver... Living donor, a liver transplantation is a little bit more complicated, and so we're still going with traditional liver techniques that take a little bit longer and it's a little bit riskier surgery. But the kidney operation, we've really made great advancements in the last 5 years.
Now, how does someone express their wishes to become a donor?
It's very simple. When people go to get their driver's license or state ID, they will be asked that question and they can say yes at that time. If they prefer not to wait for when they go to renew, they can always visit our website at lifepassiton.org and they can register online there. Also, Life Center has a paper form that is always available if people wish to just fill that out, and we can mail that in, and that would add their name to the Ohio Donor Registry or the Kentucky Registry or Indiana.
Well, I'm kind of curious. Did you know who your donor was? Did you ever get a chance to meet that person or talk to that person?
No, definitely not. It would be nice to hear from the family, and I look forward to that opportunity if the day comes.
And most of the time, that's the case. You don't know who the donor is. Tanya's situation was a little unique because
right.
It involved somebody she knew. And
yes, but it's interesting. I was actually working on another story here not too long ago, and it was a patient who had received a liver transplant last year. And they went through the steps of what Life Center also does is if the donor or recipient wishes to, communicate with the other side of that, they will send us the communication and then we reach out to the other side to let them know we've received this communication. Would you like to receive it? And in this case, the donor family had said, yes, we want to receive the communication. And since then, this family has met and really fostered a relationship that I think really has been healing for the donor family in a lot of ways, just getting to meet the recipients of their loved ones' organs. And also, I think for the recipient as well, to get to know that family. So it's you do hear stories like that at times. And I think that is just, again, it's just a wonderful part of this miraculous process that occurs.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the discussion. And let's talk with Mary in Wyoming. Good afternoon, Mary.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm just sharing a story from a personal experience. My very good friend, when I was in seventh grade, she was diagnosed with brain tumors. And over the course of a couple of weeks, she was hospitalized. And right before she died, she had told her parents that she wanted to donate her organs. And she was so young, she thought that it might be useful. And this is 25, maybe almost 30 years ago that this happened. And of course it sticks with me, but her parents made that tough choice after she died to do that. And they, over the course of several years after she died, some of them were really quickly, but they still received them way later, letters from the people and the family members of the recipients of her organs and tissue. And her, I remember her corneas, and back then that was a brand new thing that had either saved their lives, greatly enhanced the quality of life for people. And because she was so young, they were able to offer it to, you know, younger people that were in need. And I think they cherish and feel like there was quality and something to be had from making that tough choice and doing what they could in that, in such a difficult moment. Mm. So I just find that to be to be touching, and it's something that changed my mind about, you know, putting on the back of my driver's license or whatever that I would be a donor.
Very good, Mary. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
I think that's a great story. Just and I think a lot of times it's that personal story where people who may not have been touched by this issue or may not have a family member, but to have a personal account like that, I think that is what, again, helps them to connect to the purpose and why this is the right thing to do. And it's such a wonderful way to help someone else who is in need. So I hear stories like Mary's all the time where they're moved by, you know, an experience like that. So
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. We're going to take a break, and afterward we'll be talking more about organ donation. And in 15 minutes, Ann Thompson tells us how a computer is helping in the battle with drug-resistant infections. And we'll be taking more phone calls. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guests are Dr. Shimmel Shaw, Andy O'Malley, and Real Beatty as we talk about the need for organ donations and what a transplant involves. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk with Day in Hyde Park. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I called because I have been trying to donate all my life. I started the eyes in the 60s and then on through my life, because I'm 84 now. But then I thought, I called to find out, is there anything I can do? And you can do it in your 80s, and I got, and my skin is going when I go. And I think people ought to know that.
Okay. I agree.
There's all kinds of potential. I mean, like you were saying earlier, you're looking at people who are 69 and up now for donations. So,
yes, and I know that there have been cases where there have been organ donors who have been well into their 70s, and as well as tissue donors upward in age. So, again, I think it's important to reinforce that point that people should never take themselves out of that process because they think they may be too old. So I think this caller just, again, highlighted a very important point.
Yeah, I think, you know, leave your options open, keep the box checked on your driver's license, and see what happens.
Yes, and Day, as a recipient, thank you so much for making that courageous decision. Certainly appreciative of you.
Well, let's talk with Chris. Good afternoon, Chris.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My question is, I have been intending to do a body donation to the University of Cincinnati Medical Center. When I do that, would that preclude organ donation, or is that the whole kit and caboodle, or do I have to mark something on my driver's license different?
So is it an all-or-nothing proposition?
Well, typically, the way the body donation program works now is that if you are an organ and tissue donor, they will not accept you into the body donation program, the whole body donation program.
Chris, thank you for the question. We appreciate it. Let's talk to Catherine in East Walnut Hills. Good afternoon, Catherine.
Here we go. I'm on next.
Hello?
Hello, Catherine. How are you today?
How are you? I'm registered as a donor, and my father, God, I love him more in the world, but he died of leukemia, and I was wondering how you could donate bone marrow and what the like criteria is for that, and like what hospital you would go to for that particular thing.
For bone marrow, that's actually a different organization. There's actually the National Bone Marrow Registry, and there is a local organization that would handle the testing so that you could be a bone marrow donor. But I believe it's a national registry that you would go into.
Catherine, thank you very much for your question. Let's talk with Donna in Finneytown. Good afternoon, Donna.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I enjoy the show.
Thank you.
I have a question. I'm registered as an organ donor, and I was wondering, can a person with hepatitis C donate organs?
Certainly.
Yes?
Yes, we would transplant your organs in people who have hepatitis C.
Oh, okay.
And no problems with using heart, liver, lungs, kidneys, probably tissue, although I don't know for sure, but more and more people have hepatitis C in this country. We're seeing it more and more on the donation side as well as on the recipient side, but that should not stop you.
Donna, thanks for the question. The more I hear about this, the more I am amazed at what's possible nowadays in terms of donating and transplanting.
We're in a bind. We have patients that are dying on the wait list. Patients who are becoming untransplantable. They're getting sicker. They're getting older. They're having heart attacks. They're developing cancer, things that are making them drop off the list. And especially in liver transplant, patients are dying on the list. So the way we need to counteract that is to expand the donor pool as much as we can.
Is it pretty much the need is across the board, or is there a particular organ or tissue that's more – there's more need for than any other, or –
I think it's across the board.
And that's your experience as well, Andy, what you're seeing?
Yeah. Yes, yes. I mean, I think in terms of wait lists, probably the organ that is in most need is kidneys. So that's what you'll see from that perspective. But I agree with Dr. Shaw. I mean, it's across the board.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. Now, if I indicate on my driver's license that I want to be a donor, my wishes are going to be carried out, aren't they?
They are. That is a legally binding decision, and it is considered first-person consent. It is very important that when you make that decision, that you share that decision with your family so that they know what your wishes are and they can honor those wishes. You know, there's nothing, it couldn't be any worse than, you know, to find out something tragic and sudden has happened to your loved one. But then to add on to that, not to know what they would have wanted and to feel like, take that burden away from them and make that decision and share it with them. And I think that just helps in that whole process because it's all, you know, it's just everything is happening so quickly and suddenly.
Can your family override your decision?
They cannot. It's a legally binding decision. And it's, as I said, it's first person consent.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the discussion. Let's talk with Craig in Blue Ash. Hi, Craig.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for letting me on the call. First of all, about 12 years ago, I had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and traveled the country trying to get fixed at different cancer centers and couldn't find a donor because apparently I was too weird. So I ended up doing an autologous transplant donated to myself here at Jewish and saved my life. But my question is actually about the finances of transplant, and I'm curious what the cost is per case on average, if you know it, and you know, maybe what proportion of the total healthcare spend is in transplant area.
Okay, Craig, thank you very much.
on my end, the cost exceeded $500,000, and thankfully for good insurance. Because, you know, of course, without the support of an insurance program, it would not have been possible for me.
It's a good question. Mm-hmm. We are dealing with a high-tech resource that is very expensive. And in order to be considered for transplantation, you need to have insurance. We can't transplant someone who doesn't have insurance. The average liver transplant costs about $250,000. And we do about 6,000 liver transplants per year. And liver transplantation is one of the three most expensive operations or procedures that's done in the hospital. And it's a big deal. And it's a big healthcare expenditure. In terms of the percentage for the nation, it's actually not that much because we're not doing that many in terms of kidneys, livers, hearts, and lungs. And the one operation that actually has the most resource utilization in the country is spine surgery. So because we're doing so many more. But so overall, it doesn't amount to as much as you might think. But on a case-by-case basis, it's a very costly procedure.
Does it cost the donor's family to make a donation? That's something.
No. And that's what I wanted to say. From the donor side, there is no cost. Once death has been declared and the donation process begins, Life Center takes on those costs for operating room, anesthesia, all those procedures that must occur for this actual recovery to take place. So there is no cost to the donor family.
Let's talk with Tanya in Kenwood. Good afternoon, Tanya.
Hi. I was calling because I'm actually a registered donor as well, and I grew up in Western Europe in the 90s. I lived there for several years, and because of Mad Cow, I guess I'm not able to donate blood or plasma or anything like that, but with Mad Cow and such also having been in other parts of the world, I'm just curious how that, A, affects donation, and B, if there is at any point going to be a change to the policy of not allowing blood, plasma, such things, donations.
Can't comment about blood and plasma, but Mad Cow should have no effect on your ability to donate down the road, or the risk of Mad Cow, for that matter.
I think that also brings up a great point. You know, part of this process is the medical questionnaire that is taken to make sure that the donor is suitable. So that, of course, is part of that. So I think that's a great question.
And also, it's really, don't let anything stop you from registering, no matter what. And encourage your family and friends that as well, because the professionals with the Life Center, they will actually go through the medical and social history of the patient, and they will look at every opportunity and make sure that that a donor's wishes, can be fulfilled. And so don't let anything stop you from the registration process, and then the medical professionals at the time will make sure that whatever is possible can happen.
When you go through the process of donating for blood, it's such a different process because blood is pulled from many different donors, and it's a lot more exhaustive in terms of making sure travel history and medical history is up to date. That it's just very different than organ donation. So I would just stress, try not to confuse the two.
Now, we had a question from Brian in Fairfield, and he heard that one reason sometimes people are fearful of becoming donors is they hear that the doctors won't be working as hard to save them. Could you discuss? That's not the case at all.
No, that's not the case. And honestly, that when we're in the community talking with people, we hear that quite a bit. The fact is that a medical professional's only responsibility is to save that patient's life. And it isn't until death has been declared that the donation becomes part of the discussion. So it's two very separate entities, and I think it's important for people to keep that in mind.
There's two specific types of donation. There's donation after brain death, which is the patient is brain dead, and they're not going to have any function. And at that point, we approach them for organ donation. The other type is when the donor has basically donation after circulatory death, where really there's nothing salvageable. So they have some brain function, but they're not going to walk out of the hospital. And that's deemed by multiple professionals where if we pull the breathing tube out, will this person die within 30 to 60 minutes or 120 minutes? So both cases are cases where it's not like someone's walking around and then they're going to be an organ donor. They're, you know, something drastic and sudden has happened or something's happened to the patient and it's really not salvageable.
And Dr. Shaw can probably attest to this better than I can, but doctors who are going to be involved in the declaration of death have absolutely nothing to do with the transplant process.
And really, I hate to cut everybody short, but we have to get to the next item in line here. Thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Dr. Shimel Shaw, also Andy O'Malley, and also Real Beatty join me this afternoon.